Hey, it's me, your pile of dirty laundry that's stacking up. I know that cleaning and washing me is not necessarily the most fun process and it can take a while, but if you want to make that process more enjoyable, how about you just pop in an episode of this podcast? Before continuing my first ever journey through the Harry Potter series, just a few quick announcements. First, this is the first episode of Potterless in July, meaning that it is donation time. Here at Potterless, each month we take $1 for every member of our team over at patreon.com/potterless and donate it to a different charity. At the time of recording, we have 991 patrons, meaning that we will be donating $991 to Facing History and Ourselves. So this charity uses lessons of history to challenge teachers and their students to stand up to bigotry and hate. It's a charity that partners with educators around the world to reach millions of students in thousands of classrooms each year to teach them about bigotry and hatred in the past. I chose this charity because I feel like recently I have been learning a lot of things that weren't necessarily taught to me in history class, and that makes me very upset to know that the history of the country that I grew up in wasn't fully explained to me as a kid and was whitewashed down a little bit and made to seem nicer than it actually was. I really support that this charity is trying to teach children where we come from and how we cannot repeat mistakes of the past. I like that their focus is trying to get kids to talk with their parents at the dinner table about it and things like that. So if you want to learn more about this charity, you can go to facinghistory.org. Also, I'm excited to announce that Multitude is doing an online live show on July 30th at 8 p.m. All of your favorite Multitudes are going to be there. Some of the formats will be existing things we've done in the past. Other things will be new. I'll let you know that I'm doing one thing that's new and one thing that's familiar, so I'm very excited to do that. If you want to get tickets, you can go to multitude.production/digital-live. 25% of all sales will be donated to Black Lives Matter charities. And if you can't watch it live, that's okay. You will still get a link and you can watch the replay if 8 p.m. Eastern time doesn't work in whatever time zone you're in. Again, for tickets and information, go to multitude.production/digital-live. And speaking of a wonderful group of humans, we have new patrons to welcome to the team. So shout out to Shul Manatrix, Rebecca, Natalie, Mayan, Chiara, Atius, Chloe Wilkins, Tabitha Kraft, Reb Noonan, Anna Catherine Hodges, Julia Packett, the return of Michael Beck, and someone that made their name, it's definitely Ludo Bagman. A name correction for Kirsten English, apologies for not saying Nina Jaselic and Ribbon Monstrosity in the past couple of episodes as producers, shout out to Caitlin Ridley who upgraded their pledge, and a huge shout out to our newest producer-level patron, Caw Caw Mother Feathers. They join the ranks of Vicky, Aaron, Clown, Marchismo, Samantha, Juan, Rosemary, Maria, Romina, Audra, Eleanor, Nikita, Ali, Amelia, Sarah, Ben, Rachel, Zachary, Orchid, Vivian, Haley, Alex, John, Noel, Liz, Brandon, Claire, Rory, Veronica, Lada, Noah, Tracy, Colleen, Jennifer, Friday, Summer, Justin, Jacob, Maya, Mark, Polly, Zena, Harlan, Noelia, Addy, Nikki, Kine, Amanda, Alicia, Kafir, Sarah, Marta, Eileen, Keegan, Mr. Folk, Maya, Floor, Siri, Georgia, Skyla, Edel, Professor Threat, Ellie, Elizabeth, Michael, Kelly, Carrie, Connie, Jen, Nedry, Will, Samantha, Aurora, Marcos, Courtney, Marik, Ashton, Brittany, Phelan, The Meadows Family, Jenny McKenna, Heather, Brad, Thomas, Brianna, Kevin, Laurie, Chrissy, Jarl, Ashley, Pita, Sophie, Jen, and Callahan, Leah, Melissa, Bella, Melanie, Elizabeth, Britt, Becca, Reese, Adam, Joseph, Lily's mom, Tiron, Money, Madison, Kyle, Tonks, GK, Sabrina, Sophia, Farzan, Melanie, David, Matt, Okama, Hime, Yimki, Boney, Pony, Jacob, Kelsey, Taco, Blufish, Rike, Taylor, Rochelle, Megan, Alicia, Riley, Colleen, Laurel, Rossanne, Erica, Miranda, Landon, Kendra, Natanya, Yugen, Darcy, Richard, Sandra, Craig, Andren, K, Steve, Lior, Angela, Julia, Demi, Kelsey, Michael, Danae, Michelle, Callista, Kringle, Lovekesh, Jennifer, Crystal, Henrika, Jeremy, Delkis, Katrina, Jerrica, Michelle, Casey, Megan, 1000, Zot, Serenity, Jack, Sophia, Matthew, Dane, Rochelle, Kirsty, Robin, Chick, Mermaid, Aaron, Biatch, Ilaria, Liam, Lori, Gregory, Chris, esteemed nuggets and can't I bother? Who never go swimming in a pool without bringing a towel down and then they have to knock on a window and scream very loudly to their mother inside, hey mom, please get me a towel, I forgot to bring one down and I'm very wet. If you want to be like one of these amazing patrons and get access to bonus episodes, director's commentary, exclusive live streams, exclusive merch and more, you can head on over to patreon.com/potterless. But without further ado, let's get into episode 133 of Potterless, the first of two episodes covering act two of a Harry Potter sequel, guest starring Anna Brisbane, aka Brizzy Voices. Hello, Internet, and welcome back to another episode of Potterless, the tale of a 28-year-old man who never read the Harry Potter series as a kid. He eventually got around to it, and now he's doing things beyond spin-off material of sorts. My name is Mike Schubert. I'm that grown man, and I'm here joined today by someone that you may know as Brizzy Voices. It's Anna Brisbane. Anna, how's it going?
Hey, it's pretty good. How's it going with you?
You know, as we said before recording, all things considered, it's good. I feel like there's just a constant state of all things considered before any sentence I say these days. So, you know, given the world is on fire, it's great.
Yeah, but you at least have so much new Potter content to consume. That's really exciting.
Yeah. and extra impetus to do non-canon stuff because of a certain person's Twitter. Yay!
Yeah. I mean, at least there is so much non-canon out there for us to
I'm very thankful that the timing of me doing non-canon stuff lined up with J.K. Rowling deciding to bookend Pride with Twitter storms of the anti-trans variety.
Yeah, and no less than probably the unofficial stuff that she probably hates the most. Pretty sure she's got to hate Harry Potter musical stuff, considering how protective she is of it.
That should just give me extra fuel. But we are here to discuss the remaining parts of a Harry Potter sequel. Now, you are not engaged to anyone in the cast, are you? Is this another
not
surprise
yet.
I'm going to learn?
No.
Not yet.
If I follow in my best friend's footsteps, I guess it might be on the horizon, but not yet.
I'll go send a letter to Darren Criss letting him know. But what is your experience with the Harry Potter trilogy? When did you watch it? Are you a big fan of it? Where does that all fall with your fandom?
I wish I could specifically remember the first time I saw Harry Potter musical. I assume it was just some point in high school, because I specifically remember rewatching it first year of college with my Quidditch team. We had like a Harry Potter party where we like made cauldron cakes and pumpkin pasties.
Yes.
And watched Harry Potter musical, and it was the best. So I've definitely seen a Harry Potter musical two or three times, and then Harry Potter sequel I had only seen once, probably the year it came out, and probably not since until yesterday.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
And
yeah.
I haven't seen the next one, the 5-hour long saga that Tessa refers to. I've not seen that one.
Yeah, I have not obviously seen it either. I did not realize it was so long until Tessa brought it up, but it's okay. We'll see. I'm excited to talk about it, but I'm excited for discussing the rest of a Harry Potter sequel, which I did enjoy. I don't know. I feel like I did enjoy Act 1 a little bit more, but there was less umbrage in Act 2, so that made me a little happy, and that's like the biggest issue. That whole portrayal felt gross, especially given what's been going on recently. So it was
certainly
nice to have a bit of a distraction from that the most of this act, since it doesn't really center on her.
Yeah, and Act 2 has so much like action and intrigue and reveals that it's less like, oh, potty joke, kind of trans-coded joke. None of that. It's just like, mm-hmm. Oh, we've got stuff to like keep us on the edge of our seats now.
Yeah, it's weirdly like the reverse of Act 2 in a Harry Potter musical. In a Harry Potter musical, Act 2, I think, was not as much fun because there were less songs in it, and that left room for more gross jokes. Whereas in this act, there was more action, so I feel like there were less gross jokes because they kept driving the plot along.
Yeah.
I still didn't feel like there were a ton of songs, but the action did keep things moving along pretty smoothly.
Yeah. Agreed.
So Act 2 begins with Dean reading a big exposition dump from the Daily Prophet, and Dean then calls Sirius Black Sirius Black. We've discussed on the previous episode that hopefully this Dean portrayal is making fun of the fact that he's one of the few black characters in the series, and hopefully it's not a lol, this is what black people are like
I know,
joke.
Yeah.
So I'm just gonna give them the benefit of the doubt and really hope.
Yeah, it definitely makes me uncomfortable, but I don't know whose idea that was. It might have been the actress's idea. It might have been Nick Lang or Matt Lang's idea. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But obviously, if it was the actress's idea, then I don't want to bang on her for her own jokes, but not a fan of it.
I'm going to save my critiques on it until I can talk with people from Starkhood and double check. And hopefully they go, yes, this was a not the best executed joke about the lack of diversity.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I can go, yay, and sleep at night. So everybody hates Umbridge for changing everything. Cho is especially sad because the Valentine's Feel Her Up dance has now been changed to an abstinence rally.
Oh my gosh. What's worst about that is when I was watching it without captions, I thought because of her southern accent, I thought she was saying, fill her up.
Oh no.
Well,
oh no, it's even worse.
So it's actually way not as bad as I thought it was. So that's good.
That's, yeah, at least it wasn't the worst possible thing I've ever heard. But yeah, I'll get into it later. The mixture of college humor with the fact that these characters are 11, it doesn't sit super well.
Yeah, there's a lot of back and forth of college humor and, oh, we're just little kids. Oh, I'm just 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like for the most part, the whole musical, you're really supposed to interpret them as college kids. And then the jokes are when they're like remember that I'm 11?
Right.
Because we're supposed to be like, oh yeah, we are not interpreting this as 11 at all. That's why it's funny.
Yeah. That's why with a lot of the jokes, I feel that the more you think about it, the worse it can get.
Yeah.
If you kind of just take it as, oh, they're college kids, so they're probably acting as if the characters are college kids. They're doing this for a college audience, etc. But yeah, when you stop and think, wait, Joe's 11, not as good. But we will move on. Neville says that everybody is taking out their anger on him, which proves to be true. Crabbe and Goyle also say that they hate Umbridge, and they are asked, wait, you guys hate her too? I thought you'd get along since she's a bitch and you guys are dicks. Seamus says that one, and they're like, I know, we thought it would be too. I'm not a huge fan. At least I don't think that bitch should be thrown around as frivolously as they do in this play. But like the core of this joke, I get, but the word choice, maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, that's stuff that totally goes over your head, like, in 2009 or whatever. It's just such the common vernacular.
Yeah, and I do want to take this time to clarify something I've said in previous things, is that when I talk about things being in 2009, it definitely comes from my perspective of me being in college in 2009,
right,
and not necessarily, like, the world, because as a college kid in 2009, me and my peers maybe weren't as keen on, oh, we probably shouldn't be saying some of these words as much. I would hope, but I cannot speak from experience, if older people, like people who were in their 30s in 2009, maybe they had the realization a couple of years earlier, hey guys, let's stop calling everyone a bitch as a joke, because it's not funny. So let me just lay that out there, that I do not speak for the world, because I was just a teenager in 2009. Hey, it's Editing Mike here. Just wanted a quick note for posterity. I don't know what past Mike was thinking when he recorded this podcast, but he forgot that he graduated high school in 2010, so I was not, in fact, in college in 2009. I was a junior in high school. I have no idea what past Mike was thinking. I'm very sorry for his transgressions and the inaccuracy of his statements. Anyway, back to the podcast.
Sure, but I'm gonna problematically announce that I loved the cleverest bitch of her age line. I still love that one.
Yeah, I think the problem, and I said this earlier, is that because they use foul language so much that some of the lines I think could have been good, but it's the fact that bitch gets thrown around a lot that it becomes not as easy to digest, if you will.
Yeah.
Like, if that was the only time they said it, maybe it would land a little bit better. But the fact that they use it in some of these throwaway lines, like this line doesn't need it. Like, you don't have to call her that. You can say something else and still get the same point across. So I think it's just like the overuse of it that makes it kind of not feel great when you're done watching the play.
Yeah, I do think a lot of it, at least when they're referring to Umbridge, comes from like, is probably based on sort of reader frustrations. I assume a lot of people reading Order of the Phoenix mainly had the thought like, Umbridge is such a bitch. Oh my God. I feel like that was a very common sentiment, and it probably feels a little bit cathartic to be able to actually say that in a Harry Potter setting and make it seem like the characters are actually calling her a bitch when Molly's like the only one who ever says the word bitch in Harry Potter.
Yeah, still wild that that actually made it into the book.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I guess the bigger problem I have is when they call Hermione.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
You don't need to call Hermione. She's Hermione. She's so
good.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Common theme is just, why are we so rude to Hermione?
Yeah. Maybe it's like commentary on like, remember how everyone was such a dick to Hermione? Like, this.
So rude.
Even in the book, like, they're exaggerating it, you know, for effect, to be like, Hermione was freaking mistreated all throughout the books.
She really was. She really was. I mean, in the first book, kind of annoying. And
right.
I'm on record as not liking book one Hermione. But then she comes around. It's fine.
She was just doing her best.
Yeah, she is. She is. So Goyle screams, I need chamomile before my slumber, which I think is just the perfect line read in that screaming manner. It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
So then Harry enters. He asks who made Cho cry and then says that he doesn't even care and just goes immediately to beating up Neville, which classic Neville mistreatment joke.
Yes.
Harry then reads the prophet. He is distraught and Ron tries to cheer him up with a red vine and Harry turns down a red vine, which, much to Ron's dismay.
And to the audience's dismay. I love how the whole audience was like, oh, no. I love like paying attention to the audience more this time around.
Yes, the audience definitely gets into it in a couple different parts. And I do think that it's very funny that over the course of Act One, Starkid has established enough of a love of red vines that the first time someone turns it down, the audience is crestfallen and heartbroken.
Yes, very effective.
So Lupin enters. Lupin says, "I'll ignore that some of you are late if you ignore that I'm the latest."
Uh-huh.
And nobody laughs, so he asks, "What's wrong?"
I love it so much. It's so dumb. I love that he's like, "You're not laughing at my joke. What the heck?" It was a good joke.
Yeah, I said a great joke. Nobody laughed. Clearly, something is wrong.
Come on, I'm the cool teacher.
So he asks them what's wrong. They say that they're afraid of Umbridge and everything. So he says, "Oh, so if you're afraid of the Dementors, why don't we learn the Patronus spell?" So he talks about the Patronus charm, and he says that all you need to do to cast one is have a wonderful thought. And then all of the kids in unison say, "Any happy little thought?" Is that a reference to anything, or was it just funny because they all said it in unison and there was a piano in the background?
I meant to Google it, but it sounds like such a reference, right? Like, is it a Peter Pan or something?
It really felt like a theater reference that I was missing.
I think it's from "You Can Fly, You Can Fly, You Can Fly." I think it's in the lyrics for that.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. So Cho says that her happy thought is going to be imagining all of the attention being on her at the Valentine's dance. And then Lupin makes a joke about making that a reality. And this is the first instance where I started to feel uncomfortable, because not only are we dealing with Cho being 11 years old, but now we're talking about a teacher hinting at a student-teacher relationship with an 11-year-old. This was, my brain kept thinking about it, and I just wanted to not.
I know.
Because the more you analyze it, the worse it is.
I know. And I... even if you read most of the characters as high school, college age, like, you kind of average the two and imagine them all, like, in high school, like, later Harry Potter years, even though it's literally the first year.
Mm-hmm.
But even if she's, like, in high school, that is so messed up, and it's, yeah.
I mean, even in college, I don't think there is ever a good time when you have a relationship where inherently the power dynamic is off.
Yeah.
So, it's just that joke compounded with her being 11 and being sexualized, and then also, we're going to move on.
Yeah, and her Flitwick, she makes a comment about Flitwick is going to fail her now, and oh, geez.
Mm-mm-mm. So Lupin asks Ron if he's thinking about a snack or a frumpy little girl, and he says, "No, I was thinking about Harry," and then Harry goes, "Oh, cool, I was thinking about me too."
Oh, cool, me too. Yeah, yeah. I love douchebag Harry. I love this choice for the series as a whole.
It's a very great choice. It's a very solid one. Love making fun of him for that. Then someone asks Lupin what he will think of, and then there's a piano key immediately after, and he looks off into the middle distance, and he says, "I'm going to think of the man who considered me his best friend," and Ron goes, "Oh,
Hagrid.
Yeah, nice,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
a good one."
Good one.
Which, it made me sad that there's no Hagrid interpretation in the first two musicals. Maybe he'll come up in the third, but I feel like them doing a Hagrid would have been really funny.
Yeah, that feels like there's so much potential for jokes there, and it's shocking, yeah.
Maybe Hagrid will come into the play in the third one. We'll have to wait to see. But during the middle of this lesson, Umbridge breaks in and says what the spell is going on here. Love a good pun. She is mad that Lupin is going off curriculum and shows him the Defense Against the Dark Arts textbook that he should be using. And it just looks like a dictionary. It's just a huge book. And Lupin says that textbook is like 1,000 years old. It still refers to Dementors as ringwraiths. Which, now that I have finally seen the Lord of the Rings movies, I get this joke.
Was that recent too?
It was recent. I hadn't seen it growing up, and this is why I never read the Harry Potter books as a kid and everything. I just wasn't really into fantasy, so I never got into all of that stuff. But I tried to watch the Lord of the Rings movies at multiple occasions at my friends' houses, and the music was just always so soothing, and the landscapes were always so beautiful that I fell asleep every single time I tried to watch it.
Yeah. I understand that very much so.
But finally, my wife Kelly sat me down and we watched all of them. And we watched the director's cut, so it took 37 weeks, but it was worth it. They were really good movies.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. I still haven't seen the director's cut, I don't think.
It's quite long, I will say. I don't know if it's necessary. I don't even know what's in the director's cut versus what's not in the director's cut. But I will say that I think I enjoyed the third movie the most. I have no idea if this is a hot take or not.
I don't know either.
Mm-hmm. Who's to say? But I did appreciate the Ringwraith thing, because as I watched the Lord of the Rings movies, it did feel like there was a decent amount of stuff that J.K. kind of ripped from Lord of the Rings. And maybe it's just general fantasy tropes, but a lot of the things looked quite familiar.
Certainly. But yeah, it's hard to say. I think there's a lot of stuff that is just, you know, magically inclined and,
right,
you know, a cloaked dark figure that's creepy and bad is not that original, I guess.
elves have pointy ears, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So Umbridge says that she doesn't approve of Lupin's hands-on approach to teaching. Lupin says, Cho, I was joking, which, again, if she wasn't 11, that could be funnier, but my brain immediately went to, once he said it.
I mean, I guess it just helps that first time I watched it, didn't really think about the fact that they're 11 until they joke about the fact that they're 11, and then I'm just immediately forget that they're 11 again.
Yeah, they just have to go and remind you of that a couple lines later. So Umbridge then fires Lupin, and as he is leaving, Cho says, "Too bad you were joking, Professor, because I could have been your greatest adventure." Again, 11, we're just going to move on.
Oh my God.
Lupin and Snape meet up as he is leaving, and they apologize to each other, which is really nice. And then Umbridge asks the students, "Guess who gets to be your new Defense Against the Dark Arts professor?" And everyone goes, "Snape?" And then she goes, "No, me!" Which is very funny because, first off, always the joke in the books that Snape didn't get to be the Defense Against the Dark Arts professor, even though he wanted to really badly. And then earlier in the play, there was the question of who's going to be the new headmaster, Snape? No, me.
Yeah.
So I like the little callback here.
Yeah, cute.
But then Umbridge brings out Mama's little love hand, which is one of those sorority
paddles?
Spanking things, but with nails on it. Yeah, I went to a college that did not have Greek life, so this is a bit lost on me. Okay, yeah, so I'm not well-versed in hazing tactics of sorts.
I mean, they definitely don't usually have nails. But
I was going to say, I feel like nails wouldn't be a common addition to the paddle.
Yeah, but paddle is definitely like a hazing thing, and then they decorate it with the letters or symbols on it. I think also, I feel like back in the day, it was probably a little like a school corporal punishment method or parental corporal punishment method, that paddle or switch.
Yeah, I will never understand Greek life at
me neither.
All. There's so many things that are confusing about it. I don't get the hazing. I don't get all of the different, I mean, I get that the letters are Greek, but I don't get it. It's like, oh, if you're in this house with these letters, it's this click. But if you go into this house with these letters, it's a different click. And then they have all of the different hand signs for the sororities. And I just, they get their own house. It's so foreign to me. I am so baffled by it. I don't understand why it is stuck.
Just a lot of deep, deep psychological bonding and ingraining of loyalty. Very deep-seated stuff.
It just feels like the peak of American culture of,
oh,
this is a tradition because it's a tradition, so we keep doing it. Like, there doesn't seem to be any pro of like, yeah, this is a good idea. People are like, oh, it's about a brotherhood. It's like, you can just be friends with people in a normal setting. I played club tennis in college. I was friends with people who also liked tennis. Like, I don't get why it's like, oh, we're in the club where we beat up the freshmen because we love them. I don't understand.
Yeah, it's kind of culty, you know? Like, when you go through that, it makes you closer, more bonded to the situation as a whole, because it's like you went through something to get there. And so you achieved something and stood out through something tough and you made it, and then you like earned this position and in this group that now you have to feel really loyal to.
Yeah, but I guess the whole struggle is just completely fabricated by juniors and seniors that are just hazing freshmen.
Yeah.
The hell that I went through in college was doing problem sets in the library until like 4 a.m. and then you walk out with your friends arm in arm.
Yeah.
Dorito crumbs all over your fingers and ramen in your belly.
Yes.
As you finally finished a practice set. So then there is an Umbridge and Hermione scene about Umbridge seeing Hermione as a younger version of herself, but then they're talking about the negative things that people have said to them, and Hermione says, ugly, and then Umbridge goes, oh, you're calling me ugly, and then Umbridge wants to hit her with the spiky mama's love hand, but then everybody steps up for her, starting with Ron, and then Snape steps in to get them just to go to potions class, and then they get on out of there, all of them announcing, hooray, as they leave. The only time that anyone has said that before going to Snape's potions class.
Yeah, yeah. Better place to be.
But Umbridge asks Harry to stay back and asks Harry if he knows where Dumbledore is. And Harry says that he does not. And he says to Umbridge that she can do her worst. And then Umbridge says, oh, I will. And then cracks her own finger. And I legitimately jumped in my seat while I was watching it because I thought it was real until I realized, oh, it was probably someone from the orchestra section making some sort of noise. Oh. But it was a very convincing cracking finger sound.
Yeah, I never thought of it. I always never thought about it, assumed it was real. I don't know.
you thought Joe Walker legit broke his finger.
I just never thought too deeply about it, you know? Just in the theater mode of suspend all disbelief. Everything is real.
That's just a testament to how good it was. It was incredibly convincing.
Yeah.
So Lupin then enters. He is drunk. And one of the funnier elements of him being drunk is that he pulls out a second flask after finishing his first one. And then says Alohomora to the flask and then untwists it and goes, ha ha.
Yeah. I love the use of like little minimal spells in this one.
Oh, it's very solid.
Yeah.
I feel like there wasn't enough of that in the books. If I was a wizard, I would use these spells just to do so many little things that I didn't feel like
doing.
Oh,
yeah. Accio would be... Every other word out of my mouth would be Accio.
Mm-hmm. It would be really bad. It would be really bad to the point where I feel like I would turn into one of the people from WALL-E where it's
exactly.
just like, I've never moved before.
Exactly.
I don't remember what walking is. Because you could just not teleport. What's the magic word for it?
Apparate. Yeah. And then the sport doesn't even involve running.
Oh my gosh, you're right. Yeah. I feel like you would have very specific core muscles in order to stay on a broom. But yeah, it'd be a funky build to be a Quidditch player. But yeah, it would be really tempting just to apparate everywhere and Accio everywhere and not mm-hmm. necessarily, you know, walk and pick up something.
Yup. It'd be a problem. Maybe there's magical potions and stuff to balance that out.
Right. Yeah, yeah. There's an anti-muscle atrophy potion yeah. you can drink to make sure you don't lose all your muscle mass.
Skull
much
grow,
like
muscle
I
grow.
Have done over quarantine. Oh, boy.
Yay.
What a time. I've become a big noodle-likey boy. But I got home to my parents' place. My dad has some dumbbells in the garage, and I finally was able to do a workout with not just my body weight,
yeah.
which was so... relieving for me, but not my muscles, because I think halfway through the first set, my legs were like, what are you doing?
Oh.
We're not used to this. I'm so sore immediately.
It just means you're making progress again.
That's true. It's true. It's very, very true. So Harry gives Lupin back the Marauder's map, and Lupin starts to leave, but then he says, a full moon is coming up, Harry. Stay indoors, or I'll eat ya. Ha ha ha. And then leaves.
I'll eat ya.
So we cut to Umbridge, who has turned Dumbledore's office from a Zac Efron High School Musical themed office into a Team Jacob Twilight themed office.
This is like the most clever like callback joke twist thing for Headmaster Zefron being so great and whatever. Like, you're not just recycling that. You're really like building on it and making it make sense and making you have more reasons to not like Umbridge and just laugh at everything. It's really well done.
And it's incredibly smart because at least what my understanding of the reception to High School Musical versus Twilight is that for the most part, High School Musical was beloved and Twilight was very divisive in that you either loved it or you hated it. So to do it so that you're not only changing Dumbledore's office, which is already upsetting, but also you're changing it from an objectively good thing to this terrible thing. And I've never read Twilight or watched it, but I know enough about it to know that being Team Jacob is wrong, I think. I feel like Team Edward is the less hot take of the team to be on. So I feel like it's the next level after. Do you have Twilight experience? Have you read it? Have you watched it? I would love an explanation.
See, I'm not a good example because... I read Twilight, mostly I just listened to the audiobooks, but I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But also I was Team Jacob because Edward is not, he's an empty husk. He has no, he's nothing. He has no personality.
Okay.
That is not a common opinion to have. I think at least Jacob is fun and her friend and has some form of personality. So I was always Team Jacob, but that is not
okay.
what people who actually like Twilight side with for obvious reasons.
Okay. I don't know much, but it feels like it's just a battle of everybody wants to eat Bella, but for different reasons.
Yeah, a little bit. Actually, Jacob just wants to marry her unborn
child. Oh, yeah,
child.
He like wants to marry her unborn kid.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's why I don't like Jacob. Now I remember.
Yeah, I mean, up until that point, obviously, I was Team Jacob. The whole imprinting thing was not a cute thing.
Is that revealed in the first book or is it revealed later?
The very end of the last book.
Now I feel bad for anyone that was heavily on Team Jacob, because if he was so good,
yeah.
and he's very attractive, so he's got that going for him too, or maybe you just like werewolves some more, that would be such a rude awakening to root for Team Jacob for multiple books and to try to defend him against your Team Edward friends, and then, plot twist, turns out...
Yeah,
he wants
I was
to marry
rooting for
and
you this whole
get with
time,
Bella's unborn daughter.
But you were just attracted to an egg inside her body. What? What? Question mark? Also, wouldn't you think if that were the case, he would be equally attracted to Edward with his half of the child?
Oh, there's got to be a fan fiction about that.
Yes, I've only just had this thought for the first time in my life, but now I'm interested.
So then we get a scene where Umbridge is arguing with the Sorting Hat, and she sends the hat away, and as the hat is being sent off, it says, "Tell Scarfy I love him."
Yeah.
So I appreciate a good accessory item ship. Makes me very happy.
Yes, yes, good. Confirmed, ship confirmed.
Yeah, it's canon. Umbridge is then alone in her office and is sad about Harry disrespecting her, but then the sadness turns to hunger, and then she sees some cheesecake off in the corner and wants to eat the cheesecake, and then we get the ghost of her mother entering?
Yeah, which the audience freaking loved.
They really ate it up. I did not eat it up as much.
Nor did I.
I do appreciate people acting and doing old people voices and stuff, because I always think that's funny. But it was a bit worrisome for me because she gets really into saying things that Umbridge just said earlier in their play, like chubby little fucks and all of that, mm-hmm. which never felt good. But then also she has this southern-ish accent that felt a little bit
Chillin's.
Like maybe we're getting into trying to talk like southern black people thing. And I didn't really know if they were just going for a southern vibe. Yeah, like I didn't know
if
it was.
I never had that thought because for me, that's just southern. I'm from South Carolina. So like,
okay,
Chillin's,
yeah, that was
like,
the other thing is I am very much a New Jersey born and raised boy. So I am not well versed in what is just making fun of the South versus
right.
what is racist.
I hope
it's just making fun of the South.
Yeah, same. I mean, I never had the thought, but I'm white, so who knows?
Who's to say? Regardless, wasn't a fan of this scene.
What I did like was the little, "Do you love them enough to kill them?" That was the one part that I appreciated.
I did have in my notes, that's the one redeeming moment for me. Do you love them enough to kill them?
Yes, I love that.
And then Umbridge later on says, "But how do I kill the children? I don't want to hurt them."
Yes. Do I use this axe I've been sharpening this whole time?
So Snape then enters, and Snape gives us what is very important in terms of canon for a Harry Potter musical and that whole extended universe, is Snape says, "Where did the poster of Headmaster Zefron go?"
Mm-hmm.
So that establishes that Zac Efron was a past headmaster of Hogwarts,
yes.
which is very good.
Oh, do they never say that in the first one?
If they did, I missed it.
I presume they did, but I could have been wrong. I think that was the idea, though, is it's like one of the portraits on the wall of headmasters, but this time it's a... The Zac Efron poster.
That would make a lot more sense because usually in the headmaster's office, that's where all of the past headmaster portraits are. So yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah. See, it's even smarter than we thought.
Mm-hmm. So when Snape asks this, Umbridge says that she's Team Jacob. And then Snape replies, "What do you want, you horrid bitch?" Again, one of these lines where could have used a different word, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, certainly.
But Umbridge then talks about the killing Harry plan and says that she can't do it, but needs someone at the school who hates Harry. And then Snape goes, "Don't look at me." And then Lucius kicks open the door and goes, "No, look at me." And then does what is so fantastic that I rewatched it roughly 82 times is he does a jazz square and then a leap and then a pirouette and then a pose. And then Yaxley comes in and gives him water to rehydrate him.
Yes. Wonderful.
Oh, the dance moves just absolutely fantastic.
So cute.
Really? And it was at this point that I realized, because of the pose, I only just now realized that he was wearing dancer tights the whole time.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
he wasn't wearing pants.
You didn't notice that until now. That's so funny.
It's such a good
yes.
little thing I didn't notice until the particular pose, and the detail is fantastic.
Yeah.
Lucius tries to get Umbridge in on the plan, and the plan is to let the Death Eaters into Hogwarts, leave Harry alone with Lucius, he'll torture Harry to find out where Dumbledore is, and then he'll kill him, and Umbridge agrees.
Foolproof plan.
It should be fine, right? What could go wrong? So Lucius and Snape then get into a song about the pensive and how there's always douchey guys like James Potter. And the song, actually pretty solid. The guy's the actor who plays Lucius, really good. I don't know, is it vibrato where he's like, for a lot of the singing? I thought that was vibrato. Very good.
Yes. Yeah, this melody is so nice.
Mm-hmm. It was very solid. And then you have a fun element where they rip off Snape's cloak and he's transported back. He's part of the pensive flashback.
That was so smart.
And
I
you
loved
see
it.
The whole Snape yelling at Lily thing,
so
where
lovely.
James is picking on Snape. Yeah, and Lily stands up for Snape, and then James says, fine, I'll stop picking on him if you go on a date with me. And Lily goes, you're such an asshole. And so charming. And then runs over.
Yeah.
Snape then calls Lily a mudblood using his normal voice, not the Snape voice, but just, I guess, what the actor's normal voice sounds like.
He aged into that voice.
I guess, yeah. That's what I thought was funny is that immediately after, he screams, I'm sorry, as she runs away in the classic Snape voice that he's been using the whole play. So I like thinking of this in canon terms and that this moment was such a defining moment of regret for Snape that his voice changed forever from a normal voice into this one.
Oh my gosh, I did not think about that change happening right then. I interpreted this as like the little boo, 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 fading, rippling scene where it fades into the past, into the future, and he's yelling, I'm sorry, he's suddenly adult Snape and yelling, I'm sorry, back at his memories. And it's like my heart. It is. I like that.
So that's got to be what it is. That is 1,000% probably what it is. But I'm just going to leave my thing as an alternate interpretation. You know, it's like art. There's no wrong answer.
Yeah, we can ask Joe.
Yeah, true. We do have the ability to do so. Then we have Snape singing. And it was only until this point that I realized he hasn't sung in any other part of the musicals, the first or this one.
Just ensemble stuff. Yeah.
And he has a great voice.
Yeah.
He's great. It's not easy to kind of sing in a Snape-ish voice that he's got going on, but it works.
I mean, most of the time he doesn't.
I mean, how could you?
Yeah, truly. It'd have to be comical, and you don't want this whole thing to be comical. This is like actual feeling, so.
Right. Yeah. And then the ending line of this song is just peak 2010. Lucia says, quote, you were totally pwned.
Yes!
Which was a word that I think rose and fell to fame in the year 2010.
When I heard that, I was like, what? Was it only that long ago that people were using pwned? I thought it was so much longer ago.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you forget that word existed.
So strange. It was such a, I feel like in 2010, pwned is kind of like what 2013 was for epic, where everything in 2013 was epic, and then it was so much so that no one has said the word since, or at least no rational human being has said the word epic in the past 7 years.
Yeah, for sure.
So Snape, after the song, decides that he is in on the plan. Then we have a scene of Umbridge giving detention to everyone, but Harry is going to get special detention alone with Umbridge.
Mm-hmm.
As Harry is on his way to Umbridge's office for this special detention, he runs into drunk Snape in the hallway, and Snape makes Harry sit down for a chat.
You have to listen to me, I'll expel you.
Snape is drunk off of a six-pack of Guinness that has been turned into butterbeer, and they even made a custom box for it. The prop department really just continues to impress me over and over again.
Yeah.
It says butterbeer. It's got a logo like the Guinness harp, but is changed. I just thought it was absolutely fantastic. So it's this drunken ramble from Snape about liking Lily and hating James. And the way it starts off seems to be heartfelt, but then when Snape is talking about Lily, he then dives into saying that he just wanted to grab her boobies and motorboat them.
Yep.
So it just goes from being heartfelt to very childish.
Oh, yeah. Classic star kid.
Mm-hmm. Just makes you think you're going to feel emotions and then
nope.
Potty humor. Oh, Past Mike, it's funny that you brought up misdirects that you weren't expecting. Maybe you weren't expecting me to come here to let you know that it's time we got to take a little bit of a break for Wingardium Adridosa. Today's episode is brought to you by another podcast I've created, Meddling Adults. Meddling Adults is a whodunit game show for charity where I serve as the host and guests compete head-to-head in a contest of solving children's mysteries from classics like Encyclopedia Brown, Scooby-Doo, and Shelby Woo, and whoever scores the most points earns money for a charity of their choosing. Points are awarded for correct guesses, bonus points are given out for absurd accusations, and you can play along at home to test your sleuthing prowess against the wits of fictional young detectives. You can listen to Meddling Adults by searching for Meddling Adults wherever you get your podcasts or going to our website, meddlingadults.com. I hope you check it out, and happy sleuthing! And now you'll hear words from a few sponsors who make it feasible for me to be a full-time podcaster. Some of these ads will be read by me, others of them won't. The ones that aren't are inserted locally, so if you live internationally, don't be surprised if you hear an ad in your country's native language. And once those ads are complete, we'll get back to this episode of Potterless. So Snape tries to warn Harry about Umbridge when he's about to go in. Harry doesn't listen. So he enters Umbridge's office and Lucius immediately greets him. And Harry, in the most innocent way, goes, "Oh, hi." And then Lucius stupefies him right off the bat.
Yeah, he's an 11-year-old. He can't do anything.
Nah. So then we cut to everyone else being in the group detention. And Cho is pretty mean to Hermione, calls her a little Umbridge. Ron tries to cheer up Hermione with red vines, and she declines, and he freaks out that nobody wants red vines. And again, the audience, as you pointed out, very on team red vines here.
Yes, powerful stuff.
Are you a red vine or a Twizzler person?
Bro, I had never heard of red vines.
Okay.
I had never heard of red vines into a Harry Potter musical. That was my introduction to red vines, so I will only ever associate red vines with a Harry Potter musical.
I get it. I think a lot of people have that connection, and when I staunchly defended Team Twizzler over Team Red Vine in previous episodes of Potterless, I was met with mostly agreement. It seems like the vast majority of people agree that Twizzlers are better, but I did receive some fervent defense of red vines from people whose taste buds clearly are broken. And there was one person in particular that said, "No way, you're so wrong. Red vines are so much better." And then I made some sort of joke about their taste buds being broken. And they said, "The only thing better than original flavor red vines is black licorice flavored red vines."
Oh,
and then I threw my laptop into a dumpster and pushed it into the Mariana Trench because I could not deal with such a hot take.
Oh my God, gross. I didn't even know red vines makes black.
I guess. I don't know. Whoever invented black licorice.
Monsters.
John Black Licorice. I hope he lost his candy making license after doing so.
I like red vines just fine. I like them mostly for the meme. I like them mostly for Harry Potter musical. But I obviously, just taste-wise, texture-wise, much softer, nicer, I'm going to prefer Twizzlers. But they're very similar in my brain. So depends on the situation. Am I going for the meme or am I going for tasties?
Yeah. And even now, I realize that I am a 28-year-old man with the stomach of a 57-year-old, I guess, because I just have no tolerance for sweets anymore.
Yeah.
My body, just after not having candy once a year for Halloween, I guess, anytime I have candy, because I don't have a big sweet tooth, aside from like ice cream or milkshakes or basically cold frozen dairy desserts, Froyo, et cetera.
Yeah.
Anything other than that, I'm not a big sweets guy. So anytime I have candy, I remember I had a couple Smarties the other day, and after eating four, I had a headache. I was like, "Oh, I gotta lay down."
Four Smarties? Oh my God.
Oh, no, four individual, not like four packets.
I know. That's nothing.
I know. I'm not used to just like pure sugar.
Wow. I mean, that means you've been treating yourself very well.
I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's like where if you don't drink milk, you become lactose intolerant.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because I haven't given myself enough sweets, I'm just dead. But I will go on the record here to say that the only worthwhile flavor of Smarties is white. The rest of the flavors are trash.
Oh, I can't remember. They all taste the same to me.
Yeah, they're all very similar, but all the colors are very slightly fruit color. So it's almost like when you drink flavored seltzer water where you this is almost flavored like something.
What if you put a Smartie into flavored seltzer water? It just, and it matched
maybe
the color.
Oh, it's like addition where you have something that has barely any flavor, and then you add something that also has barely any flavor, and maybe it's like kind of flavored now.
And then it's perfect. Wow.
We've really done it. We're going to stop the podcast and invent Smarty X LaCroix.
Yeah, and then you have to use like red vines as a straw.
Yeah, just a bunch of things that aren't overly sweet all put together, and now it's just soda.
Yes. Genius.
So Ron makes a great comparison to try to cheer Hermione up. She says that she is similar to Umbridge, and Ron says that that would be like saying that Spider-Man and Venom are the same because they have the same powers. And I'm a big Spider-Man fan, so I really enjoyed this comparison.
Yeah, this conversation is hilarious.
It's great, and it's also nice to see Ron slowly start to be a little nicer towards Hermione.
Yeah, for sure.
Because no one is.
Yeah, it starts to reveal his feelings a little.
So then Hedwig comes in with a letter for Hermione from Little D, and Ron and Hermione go to meet him in the potions classroom. Little D is then revealed to be Draco, not Dumbledore like they thought, because previously it was Little D who gave the cloak to Sirius. So that's a big surprise reveal. And then Draco, when making this reveal, says, "The D stands for my wiener."
Yes. Yes. Very proudly.
Very, very proudly.
This kind of gives me like R.A.B. vibes. Like, who's R.A.B.? Blah, 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 blah. Although I don't think in the books they ever had like a misdirect. They never had like, R.A.B. must be this person who also is R.A.B.
Yeah.
I guess that's a little bit more like thinking Snape is Quirrell sort of thing, and then it's not.
Yeah, the R.A.B. thing, I remember I am not very good at predicting what happens in the Harry Potter series. And over the course of Potterless, I tried so hard to guess, and I was very often wrong.
To be fair, you went straight through them, right? You didn't have years of breaks between each one to theorize, in which we did.
Ah, yes. Thank you for giving me more ammo to defend myself for looking very silly. This is good. Thank
People
you.
People wrote essays and were discussing on forums forever. It's like, that was our jam, and you just went straight through, so I can't imagine what that was like.
I also went through in a very public forum in that a lot of people listen to me my horrible predictions, but I got the RAB thing pretty easily just because we met someone with the initials, or at least RB. We knew Regulus Black existed. So when there was an RAB, I thought, okay, who are all of the RBs we know? Regulus Black. And then the only scene that we really got in the books was Hermione trying to figure out who it could be. And they were looking up some names, but I remember finding it incredibly suspicious that none of the people on her, it's probably not this person list, were Regulus Black.
Right.
And that's what made me realize that it had to be him, because if she hasn't ruled him out, it's got to be him.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
So Draco reveals that they are actually Draco from the future.
Yes.
Which I think is such a fun twist that only gets better when Draco says that the way that they time traveled back was that they stowed away in Lucius's fanny pack when he used the time turner.
What the heck, man?
Any joke where they make Draco in these plays a child or very small, I think are very funny. Also, because as you see later, Lauren Lopez is so tiny.
She's so small.
How tall is Lauren Lopez? Either Lucius is very tall or Lauren Lopez is very short.
I'd say 5'5", somewhere around there.
I would guess 5'1" as well. I'm Googling Lauren Lopez height, and Google tells me 5 foot even.
Oh, hey.
And Google, of course, being very smart, asks me if I want to know the height of everyone else in StarKid. And most of the dudes are between 5'8 and 6'2.
Yeah, wow. Oh my gosh.
So it makes sense. Draco is talking about helping them out. And Draco says, quote, "I'm going to hit him with every second year charm I know. We're talking squishy tushy charms, tickling hexes, and maybe if I'm feeling especially cruel, a bubblehead charm."
Oh my gosh. I mean, one of them's real, right?
The joke of them just being so ill-equipped to fight is fantastic.
It's so good. I love it. I mean, the best part is still yet to come with that, but yeah, it's wonderful.
So Ron says, wait a second, the Draco that we know always has an ulterior motive. And Draco says, that's strange. I have no ulterior motive, as they slowly put their arm around Hermione.
Oh my gosh. I love it. It's so funny. And then when she's reaching down, opening her hand, but not touching, and reaching, but not touching, just thinking about it. I love little jokes like that in theater that aren't like super pointed to. It's like you've got to be watching what the actor is doing. No one is gonna like point it out or recognize it. You just gotta notice, and it's hilarious.
And it reminded me of back in the day, not that I was one that was debating between whether or not to grab someone's boob, because thankfully I knew not to do that unless someone has given you the express written consent that you're allowed to do so. But it did remind me of when I was in seventh and eighth grade, agonizing over whether or not to hold someone's hand during a movie or something, or put my arm around their shoulder. I would get so nervous about doing that and not trying to feel like I was coming on too strong, because in seventh grade, that was such a big deal. Gosh, the hours that I spent agonizing over those decisions, I will never get back.
Yeah, and Draco here is only 12 years old. That's like sixth grade.
Yeah, that's pretty huge.
It's a big deal.
I remember once stressing over holding the girl who I was dating's hand in seventh grade while we were watching Mr. and Mrs. Smith in theaters.
Wow, so adults.
And then it took me over half of the movie to gain the courage to grab her hand. And then I realized after I grabbed her hand that I was so nervous about it. I was then terrified that, oh no, what if my hands are sweaty because I was so nervous?
Yeah.
And then that only made me more nervous. It was just, oh, it was a stressful movie watching experience.
For sure. Do not envy that.
So Hermione grabs Draco's face before she leaves and thanks him for being brave, and then she walks away.
Yeah, I love the little moment of like, are they, she gonna give him a little peck? What is it about? And then Draco's just like, hey, look at that.
The best is, I was watching this with the closed captioning on, and Circuit has a lot of fun little jokes that they put into the closed captioning, but when Draco turns around very astonished and happy and pleasantly surprised, the closed captioning says, quote, Draco turns around like a jerk.
Oh my gosh, this is amazing.
I also definitely screenshotted the face that Lauren Lopez makes as Draco, because it is just, gosh, it's so perfectly expressive. I was laughing so hard at it.
It's so good.
So then Draco walks over to Ron and pulls out a crayon drawing of his and Hermione's wedding with Rumble Roar presiding as the officiant, with a speech bubble above his head that says, quote, by the power of Mars.
Yes. I love how they don't like really point all that out. And how Ron is just like, why is the priest a lion? And it's like, oh, you gotta remember from the first one. Otherwise, it's just a funny, weird thing that Draco did. It's like, oh, the priest is a lion, silly Draco, which is still funny on its own.
Exactly. Then Ron gets very angry, gets real close up to Draco and says, two things, Draco. One, you may be trying to help us, but two, and then just shows his middle finger and says, you're still full of shit.
Yeah.
Then Ron does the most iconic thing in the entire play, where he does the got your nose joke, eats the nose, and poops out the nose and puts the nose back on Draco's face, and then walks away with the most intense stare and point combo. Gosh.
Yeah, like, you got poop nose now. Suck it.
And Draco is floored.
Poor little Draco, baby boy.
Draco is crushed.
Get the poop off.
So the next scene is Lucius choreographing. And I stress choreographing because throughout the play, anytime Lucius talks about anything synonymous with planning or preparing or getting ready to do something, he always specifically says choreographing, which is such a nice little writing note I really appreciate since he's so into dancing.
Yes.
So he's choreographing what to do when Harry wakes up. And mid-choreograph, Harry starts to come to, so they break into these dance moves. And you just get a great shot. And shout out to the cameraman. Really great camera work in this filming of their play is it's a zoom in of Harry's face and he just gives the like, yeah, like the frown of approval,
yeah,
Obama
yeah.
meme type thing. They're like, yeah.
Not bad, yeah.
So Lucius starts to enact his evil plan. He gets a text from Umbridge and then goes, oh, Umbridge, stop texting me. Umbridge enters immediately going, did you get my text?
I know.
I think is my favorite Umbridge thing. I wasn't a big fan of all the portrayal, but the way that Umbridge asks, did you get my text? Feels like if I watched this when it came out, I would have asked people this all the time in this voice. Like, I would have ran with this bit for sure.
Are you kidding me? Yes. In college, this was the probably the most quoted part of all Harry Potter musical things for us on our Quidditch team. It would always be like, did you get my text? But you didn't text me back. It was always that, for sure.
What position did you play on Quidditch?
I was a beater.
Ooh.
Which is this very defensive position that required much less running than keeper or chaser or seeker.
Got it, got it. How does that work in Muggle Quidditch because there are no bludgers? Do you throw dodgeballs at people or something?
Exactly. We throw dodgeballs. And if you get hit with the dodgeball, you have to run back to your hoops and reset.
Honestly, it sounds like a really fun position to play.
Yeah, it is.
So Umbridge then taunts Harry about her evil plans and then leaves. You have Ron, Draco, and Hermione then entering as Union Death Eaters.
Oh my God. I love when Umbridge is walking out and they bump into her and she's like, oh, sorry. No, that's my fault. It's okay. It's just such a like normal, like when you bump into someone, it's like, no, it was my fault. Like very casual, realistic. Oh, my bad. But it's just Umbridge bumping into Death Eaters, but the Death Eaters are Ron, Harry, Hermione. It's amazing.
That's very good. So there are the Union Death Eaters. They say that you can only torture for so long before you have to take a break. So they have pizza. He actually comes over to get the pizza, but then it's a joke where Ron has a hole cut in the bottom of the pizza box, so then punches Yaxley in the face.
Knuckle sandwich.
But then Lucius is able to control the situation and figures out that they are not actually the Death Eaters. So then Ron resorts to getting a second pizza box,
yes,
and saying, oh, well, this pizza was a celebration pizza for after we saved Harry, but I guess we can give it to you. And then Yaxley very cautiously goes over to accept the pizza.
I love how he puts his wand away like, oh, there's a real one. Oh, I love it.
And then, of course, Ron punches him in the face again. Then Ron says, phase one is complete. It's time for phase two, which is just throwing the box at Lucius and then trying to untie Harry.
Such a good plan.
It's fantastic. It's foolproof. They start to get away, but then Lucius grabs Draco. Doesn't realize it's Draco at first because Draco still has their mask on. And then Draco says, would you really torture your own son? And Lucius mispronounces Draco, and the closed captioning even says in parentheses, mispronounces. And he calls him Draco.
Oh, that's so smart. I love it. Draco, what? So good.
And then Lucius still threatens to kill Draco, even after realizing it's Draco. And then you have Snape entering to defend the kids, and the line that he enters on is him yelling, well, that's absurd. Which I would love to ask you this to see if it was a normal thing that Tessa says all the time or if it was just in the last episode. People pointed out that Tessa said the word absurd roughly 315 times over the past two episodes of Potterless. So does she say this all the time or was this a secret bit that Joe made her, like, had some sort of bet that she had to say absurd a lot when talking about a Harry Potter sequel?
That would have been genius. But no, that's just her regular vernacular. I don't know if it's subconscious because of her love of Joe. But she calls things absurd all the time.
pretty great. So then Snape stupefies Lucius and Ron tries to remove the Team Jacob poster, but he can't. And then he says that it's stuck on with magic, but he runs over to the rest of the actors and then he's laughing. So
yeah.
I couldn't tell if this was intentional or if he actually just couldn't bring the poster down.
100%. That was, like, I haven't confirmed, but 100%, right? That was just Joey Richter unable to remove the poster from the spot.
Okay.
And be like, well, it's stuck with magic. I can't get it down. And everyone's just like, okay.
I definitely think that's what it is because they make mention of it later.
Yeah.
But then, and maybe this is just Starkid being really quick on their feet, later when Pettigrew reveals himself, he comes from behind the poster. So I guess they just were really solid with working on their toes and improvising.
I feel like they were just supposed to put the poster back?
Oh, I don't even know if they were supposed to put it back or if they were just supposed to...
Now my mind is messed up.
So I think they were supposed to take it down because in the Pettigrew scene later, they make fun of the fact that there's still a poster there because it's supposed to be a different room. So I think that's what they're supposed to happen. I think he was supposed to take it down as part of the scene transition.
So then how does Pettigrew come out if the poster's gone?
I guess he wasn't supposed to come out of the poster. I guess he was just supposed to come out of... I don't know. Well, I'll add this to my list of questions to ask Starkid when I hopefully get them on the podcast.
Yeah. Wait, that's messing up my brain.
Me too. Well, what better way to end this first episode of Potterless than on both of our brains being broken about whether or not the poster thing was intentional or if it was supposed to be there or if it was supposed to come back or not. So we'll continue the rest of our discussion of A Very Potter Sequel Act 2 next time. But until then, Anna, thanks so much for joining on for this episode.
Thanks for having me. Can't wait to do the next part.
Yeah, it's going to be great. If people want to find you doing stuff on the internet, where can they do so?
Oh, I am at Brizzy Voices on everything. B-R-I-Z-Z-Y Voices on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter, especially. But also, Tessa and I have the podcast Fantastic Geeks and Where to Find Them. Just talking about all things geeky and largely 25% Harry Potter's mixed into most every episode.
That happens. It happens.
Just, it's very representative of our lives.
Makes sense. Totally makes sense. Well, thank you so much for joining. Listeners, thank you for listening. And until next time, as they say, in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, as they turn to the next page of their Twilight books, Wizard on! Hey, if you didn't hear me talk about it in the intro, Multitude is doing a digital live show on July 30th at 8 p.m. Eastern. All of your Multitude hosts are going to be there. There will be some familiar formats. There will be some new and exciting things. All of us are going to get in the mix. It's going to be very fun and very silly. And 25% of all sales will be donated to Black Lives Matter charities. Don't worry if you can't watch it live. We will still send you a link so that you can watch the replay of it if that time zone doesn't work for you. And again, you can get tickets and learn more over at multitude.productions/digital live. Potterless was created by Mick Schubert. It is hosted by Mick Schubert. It is edited by Mick Schubert. It is produced by Mick Schubert as well as Vicky Garcia, Aaron Johnson, Klaus Lopu, Marchismo, Samantha Rose, Juan Sanfilio, Rosemary, Dodge, Marie, Lisa Sikin, Romina Rivadeneira, Audra, Eleanor Curlin, Nikita Power, Ali Madsen, Amelia Krauss, Sarah Nink, Ben Silver, Rachel Guthrie, Zachary Pulido, Orca Grover, Vivian the Owl, Haley Hastings, Moser, Alex Consulver, John Kotker, Noel Basile, Liz Bigelow, Brandon Pickens, Claire Spencer, Rory Collier, Veronica Bartova, Lotta Bartova, Noah, Tracy Toya, Colleen, Jennifer Mark, Lou Friede, Jay Svensson, Summer Rathel, Justin Montero, Jacob Parrish, Maya Gray, Mark Boddy, Polly Burridge, Zena Rosnowski, Harlan Haskins, Noelia, Addie, Nikki Harris, Kine, Amanda Alfred, Alicia McLaren, Kafir Shaltiel, Sarah Shedder, Marta Morrison, Eileen Gazesh, Keegan Curran, Mr. Folk, Maya Floor, Sake, Siri Scarisfar, Georgia Davis, Skyla Lilly, Edel Ryan, Professor Threat, Ellie Hoskov-Chova, Elizabeth Christofferson, Michael David, Yordi, Kelly Otilio, Kerry Crumpler, Connie Binkowski, Jen Wendt, Nedry OS, Will Huser, Samantha Lentz, Aurora Fruhoff, Marco Cepeda, Courtney Marie Grieger, Ashton Gabrielson, Brittany Gutierrez, Phelan the Meadows Family, Ginny from the Block, McKenna Tweedy, Heather Langille, Brad Harding, Brianna Cusumano, Kevin Stewart, Laurie McDonald, Chrissy Tew, Jarls Fiven, Ashley Enstrom, Peter McGrath, Sophie Duda, Jen and Rose Dowd, Callahan and Daris, Leah Reed, Melissa Robb, Bella Barlack, Melanie Demi, Elizabeth Yu, Britt McLean, Becca Spry, Reese Dignan, Adam Graham, Joseph Torp, Lily's Mom, T-Run Money, Madison Kyle, Don't Call Me Nin Fedora, GK Javier Way, Sabrina Balsiker, Sophia Loves Pigs, Farzan Jarabat, Melanie Dugrave, David Douglas, Matt Barger, Okamahime, Yimki, Boney Pony, Jacob Rossitano, Kelsey Gillespie, Taco Blowfish, Rike Mangor Jensen, Taylor Payne, Rachel Mobbs, Megan Moon, Alicia Chapman, Riley Kittis, Colleen Waters, Laurel Happy, Ross Ann Batamana, Erica Butler, Miranda Hurley, Landon Schwausch, Kendra Hertz, Natani Page, Yogan Chanley, Darcy Alexandra Harrison, Richard Johnson, Sandra Rose, Kremick Roberts, Andren Kaufman, K.A. Rob, Steve Trelor, Leo Nachum, Angela Hill, Julia Buzak, Demi Lynn, Kelsey Wellis, Michael Beck, Callista Delano, She Who Doesn't Have to Be Named, L. Kringle, Lovekesh Longer, Jennifer Terzian, Crystal Pollard, Henrique Wolf, Jeremy Elmore, Delkis, Katrina Smith, Jerica Law, Michelle Spurgeon, Casey Canales, Megan Stempin, Let's Hit 1,000 Patrons, Serenity Allen, Jax G, Sophia Lyon, Zot, Matthew Babbitt, Dane Nemcher, Rochelle Unitmaz, Kirsty, Robin Garcia, Chick Parr, Mermaid and Her Daddykins, Aaron Uggs, Not My Daughter, You Biatch, Ilaria Vicentin, Liam Simmons, Lori, Gregory Hughes, Krista Lee, Caw Caw, Mother Feathers, Nina Jaselik, Ribbon Monstrosity, Steamed Nuggets, and Can't I Potter? Web design by Kelly Schubert, and the music is by Bettina Campomanes. If you want to find us on social media, you can at facebook.com/potterless, twitter.com/potterlesspod, instagram.com/potterlesspodcast, and reddit.com/r/potterless. For any and all information about the show, as well as transcripts, you can go to potterlesspodcast.com for bonus content. You can go to patreon.com/potterless, and for merch, you can go to potterlesspodcast.com/merch. If you want to tell someone about the show, whether you reach out directly or you leave a rating and review online, those really do help. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, as I say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, wizard on!